I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I am proud to announce that Food Pharmacy, one of the biggest health brands in Sweden, is now launching its highly acclaimed blog, as well as books and podcasts in English. Food Pharmacy is eager to take its award-winning Scandinavian concept and share it with the rest of the world, and to contribute to the fight against the global burden of lifestyle-related diseases. In 2014, Lina Nertby and Mia Klasa started Food Pharmacy, embarking on a long, sometimes meandering, often magical journey towards their goal of improving public health. Along the way, they've spoken with a variety of experts and professionals in various fields related to health and lifestyle. In this podcast series, you'll meet a few of them. Be a part of the journey. This is The Food Pharmacy Show.
Morning, Mia.
Well, good morning, Lina. I am so excited today since we are going to talk about one of our absolute favorite subjects when it comes to food and health. I'm talking about fiber.
And now someone might think, fiber? How boring is that? How can they be so thrilled about something as boring as fiber?
Well, we hadn't thought much about fiber either until one day, I don't remember how old we were, about 35-ish maybe?
Yeah.
A professor looked strictly at us and asked, "I really hope you do feed your pets." Well, we looked at each other. "Yes, we do feed our dog and horse, yes, professor."
Yes, and at that time we actually had a hamster as well. And that hamster we also fed, of course. But that wasn't at all what the professor meant. He looked at us again and said, "I mean the billions of pets you have in your gut. Because if you do want to stay healthy, it is absolutely vital to keep these pets happy. Actually, research has shown a link to mental and physical diseases when people don't feed their pets.
And also, it has been shown that well-fed pets are linked to a strong immune system and protect our health. This is where the fiber comes in, because fiber is the best food we can give to the bacteria."
So anyone that wants to eat healthy should pay attention to fiber. And as you will hear in this interview, fiber is a true superfood. Sadly, the food we eat today, and then I'm thinking about the processed food, contain way too little fiber.
Which is also the reason why so many of us don't have enough of fiber in our daily diet. And when you hear how much good fiber can do for our health, you realize that if there is anything you could do in taking a small step towards better health, it is to add fiber to our food.
Yes, and it doesn't matter how you eat today. Just focus on what you should add. If you thrive on burgers and pizza, make sure to add some veggies.
And preferably in different colors, since you then get a variety of antioxidants at the same time.
So, now it's time to welcome our guest in this podcast. He has a PhD in bioorganic chemistry from Harvard, where he studied how our cells repair damage to the DNA.
He has been partner at McKinsey & Company, focusing on innovation and healthcare.
And he is the founder of Zendegi and Frill, two companies researching human nutrition and creating healthy products. Sorry for interrupting, but Frill's ice cream is, by the way, something we always have in our fridge, don't we?
it's so deliciously now. We do. We have it in our fridge always. He is also the author of a book on fiber and its benefits, to be published in July in Europe and August in the US. So now we are thrilled to welcome Khosro Nikpay.
Welcome to the Food Pharmacy Show, Khosro Nikpay. I'm so honored to have you here. And today we are going to talk about dietary fiber. I know you like that subject, don't you?
I love that subject. It's actually an honor for me to be on your show. So thank you. Mm-hmm.
So fiber is a nutrient we need to pay more attention to. What kind of nutrient is fiber, and where do we find it?
Yeah, it's interesting that one even calls it a nutrient, because it's actually, for us, it's not a nutrient. We can't do anything with fiber. But it's one of the most important nutrients for the bacteria that live in us. That's their food. Mm. And we'll talk about it maybe a little bit more later, but if we don't feed them, they're not happy. And when they're not happy, horrible things start happening. Mm. So it's actually the food for the bacteria. And I think you asked where does it come from? It primarily comes from almost any plant has fiber. Mm. So, yeah.
It's interesting because a few years ago, before I started my own journey to get more healthy eating habits, I actually didn't know that the best way to get fibers was through having vegetables, greens and fruits. I thought that I should go and buy like spaghetti, where they said like fiber-rich spaghetti or bread. I mean, all these things that I avoid now, I actually thought was the way to get fibers. Isn't that strange?
No, but there is some fiber in spaghetti. I think any fiber is good, I would say. Mm. So, but obviously the, you know, spaghetti, white bread, it's quite low, the amounts. And not only that, there is actually, I can sort of describe it a little bit. The basic building block for all of these things is sugars. And then sugars get basically into these long chains or branched chains. And if the connection between the sugars is of a particular kind, then your body can use it. It can basically cut it until you get the individual sugars, and then your body uses the sugar as energy. Now, the ones that we can cut, our bodies can cut, is starches. Or some people call it complex carbohydrates. Mm. They're almost as good as fiber. They don't really get used. They get partially used by the bacteria, but also it takes the body a long time to break them down. Mm. And therefore, your insulin response and under sugar in your blood is actually very good. So you get the energy, but you don't get these insulin spikes in your bloodstream. So that's sort of the type of connections that your body can break down. But even better is the ones where the connections cannot be broken down. And so it travels all the way into your intestines. And then there the bacteria break it down and they use it for themselves. Mm. So when you say spaghetti or white bread, those chains are rather short. And therefore, it's very close to a normal sugar. Your body breaks it down very quickly. And you can, there's an easy test to do, especially for kids, it's always surprising. If you take a piece of white bread and chew on it, well, guess what? The enzymes in your mouth break the simple starches down to sugars. And it tastes sweet after a while. But if you do that to a sort of a whole grain bread, it takes a much, much longer time to get any sweet sensation. Mm. So that's I think the why you sort of said, well, maybe I shouldn't have pasta, maybe I should have more vegetables or whole grain things. But in general, the more complex the carbohydrate, the sort of better for you ultimately. Mm.
Talking about fiber, we often hear the word prebiotic. Would you please explain the term prebiotic?
Yeah, I think it all they're almost synonymous, but not quite. So a prebiotic is something that fundamentally feeds your bacteria.
You mean the bacteria in the gut?
In the gut, yes. Mm. The probiotic is the actual gut bacteria, and the prebiotic is what feeds them. And now, fiber is not the only thing that feeds them. So therefore, prebiotic is a much broader term than fiber. But fiber is a prebiotic. But let's say recent research shows that, and that's why we're also getting quite interested in it, is one of the more common sweeteners, xylitol, acts as a prebiotic. It actually gets metabolized by your bacteria, so it feeds them. Whereas, let's say, erythritol does not. Mm. So the prebiotic is basically, think of it as the food for your bacteria, and then fiber is one of the most common one and the most trustable one, I would say. But it's one of them.
But going back to the white bread and compare it with fibers that goes all the way down to your gut, are all fibers prebiotic?
No, there is, you need to group, it's a good point. You need to group fibers into really two broad segments. Remember I said the carbohydrates, the long chain, the complex carbs, we can break down. The enzymes in them can cut them. Then there is soluble fiber, which generally is what gets eaten by your bacteria, and your bacteria can break them down. Then there's insoluble fiber, basically cellulose, what you find in the bark of a tree. That's also lots of sugars. It's made out of, it's also a fiber. But even your bacteria can't break them down. So they end up basically moving through your intestines. They also fulfill an important role because they can absorb sugars. They can they work basically as some people call it, the oiling of your intestines. They sort of move things through. They're bulking agents.
Cleaning the intestines, you could say.
Yeah, sort of. The animals who can use them, they have to go through quite a bit of a hassle. Like cows, for example, they can eat grass and the cellulose in the grass, the insoluble fiber, but they need to have multiple stomachs with very specialized bacteria that break it down and so on and so forth. We don't have those bacteria, and therefore we cannot break them down. So it's really those two groups of fibers, the fibers that feed your bacteria, the soluble fibers, which means basically if you put them into water, they can kind of absorb enough water and they can disperse. Or form a gel or things like that. And then there's the insoluble fibers, which is basically cellulose at the end of the day, or lignins. So they cannot be digested by us or our friends, the bacteria, and they just pass through basically, but they fulfill a lot of important roles.
So it's important to get both soluble and not, yeah?
Yeah.
To combine.
And, there's an interesting thing. If you go back to the 70s, and a lot of the ideas in people's mindset around fiber is because in the 70s, primarily the cellulose, the insoluble fiber was seen as important and as sort of this thing that you should eat. And the science has moved on dramatically since then. But so people still in their minds think fiber is something that's sort of hard and grainy and fibery and things like that. But a lot of the soluble fibers, you wouldn't even notice. If it was in a glass of water, it dissolves. You wouldn't even feel anything between your teeth or, you know, so people still have a bit of the mindset of the old fiber that was the ballast, you know, material.
But is that because you then, when you talked about fibers back in the 70s, you talked about fibers because you wanted to have like a healthy go through the stomach, sort of, I mean, the food, or?
Yeah, people knew it was healthy. And since the two often come together, people assumed that sort of the roughage was the thing that was doing the good things, and it does. But actually, the more important one is the soluble fiber.
So Why is it important to get a varied intake of fibers? And maybe you could give some example of different bacteria fed by different fibers.
Yeah, so why is it important? So that I don't know if you know this story of Philip Pullman, I think it's called His Dark Materials.
No.
It's a trilogy. I think it's also made into a series and was even a movie with Nicole Kidman or something made out of the book. But there's a nice story. It plays in a different world where people have these, their souls, or they call them demons or something like that, which is this animal, but it's not inside of your body, but it's next to your body. And this thing sort of takes on your character, sort of is connected to you. It's a nice sort of image. But that image always struck me as our bacteria are kind of this animal that lives inside of us. As a matter of fact, we even have a brain around our gut, which functions as some kind of a intelligence. And this grouping of neurons around our gut is the same size as, you know, a squid's brain. Or half a cat's brain. So this thing is quite intelligent in that sense. It's an animal in many ways. It just made up of cells, made up of many, many different species. And this thing is quite important, and we have to feed it the same way you would feed your pet.
Yeah.
And it interacts with you on so many dimensions. It creates certain chemicals such as short chain fatty acids, which have a huge impact on your cardiovascular health, on your immune system, on your gut health itself, appetite control, all of those things. So that's just one of the chemicals that these bacteria produce and basically put into your system. They have the little brain around your gut interacts with the big brain in your head and has all kinds of effects also on your mood. You know, there's some early studies on ADHD, positive impact on ADHD, and so on and so forth. So to come back to your question, fiber and other phytonutrients also, so anything that gives a color to berries and things like that is also quite important for these bacteria. But basically, you are feeding these bacteria, and you have to feed them in the same responsibility that you would have towards your dog or my dog. Yeah. I don't sort of go along for a day and not feed my dog. It's criminal.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. You have to feed these bacteria. It's this living thing inside of you. Now, some voices say it may be even worse. They actually sit there and we're just a vehicle for them to move around and feed themselves, because there's about 1,000 different species of them. There's only one of us. They have about 2 million genes. We only have 25,000 genes. There's almost as many of them, some say even more of them in terms of numbers, than the cells in our body. So actually you almost say that's the main organism. That's the main being. We're just sort of the thing to move them around the world and find food for them.
Yeah.
That's not how I see it, but I think I see it as my pet and I need to feed it. Now, what kind of bacteria there are, as I said, there's 1,000 species, about 500 of them are, no, about maybe less, about 100 of them are more abundant. Nobody knows what they're exactly doing. Mm. It's a very complex system. Think of it. We have not even figured out the genetics of humans in an adequate way. Mm. And we have about 25,000 genes. There's 10 times more genes in the bacterial colonies, the bacterial groups that are in our intestines. So it's a very, very complex thing. We have a few ideas, although everything I'm stating right now is, you have to take it with a grain of salt. The science is not hard on it.
Mm.
So we have sort of big groups. I always call them ABC, ABC and F groups, like the grades you get in school. But again, take it with a grain of salt. So there's the actinobacteria, and there's the bacteroidetes, the A and the B, and they generally like to have the fiber in fruit and vegetables tend to increase their numbers.
Mm.
Now, one has to be careful. These are groups of bacteria, most of which seem to be beneficial, but not all of them. It's the same as human beings. You know, most human beings are nice, but every now and then you get a criminal also in there. So, so with these bacteria, it depends very much on the individual strain. And so when I say actinobacteria, I'm saying humanity, you know, and bacteroidetes, I'm saying all the Martians and so on and so forth. So you have to be a little bit careful, but fruit and vegetables tend to feed the A and the B bacteria, the actinobacteria and the bacteroidetes. And then there is the Clostridia, the C, and they tend to sort of prefer, so they and the B ones tend to prefer legumes and grain derived fiber. But again, as a general sort of sense, if you look at the literature, that seems to be. And then there's the Firmicutes, or Firmicutes, they're not very cute necessarily.
I've read about those. They are very common in people like you and I who live in the Western world and have a Western
diet. That's right. Yeah. Again, as a very sort of, if you step way back and look at it, you kind of want to have less of them. But there's some in there that are quite important. So again, it's a bit, one has to be a little bit cautious. But the more you sort of increase the positive ones, the ones that actually help you, the more automatically you reduce the ones that are not helpful to you. And fiber in general does that. But if you can have fiber from multiple sources, then you probably have a richer set of bacteria. And there's another correlation that people see is that the more diversity you have in your bacterial species, the better for you.
Yeah.
So that's clear, but which specific bacteria, and they're all interacting with each other. That's why it's so complex. So it's not easy to say, I'm going to increase this one and this one and this one, and then I'm going to be healthy. That's the problem. And so I think I've seen already some products coming on the market that have claims like that. I think it's disingenuous. I don't think it's correct to do it like that way.
Are you allowed to make those comments? I mean, health claims? No.
People make all kinds of claims, and then by the time they have sort of been found out, they have already disappeared or changed it or something like that.
So yeah.
There's a lot of attempts to claim things, but ultimately, I think one has to stick with. And I think the fiber story is powerful on its own. You don't need to even make much more claims than that.
No.
My favorite statistic, and it's based on meta-analyses, is, and it's an easy number to remember. The question is, what's healthy? And to me, healthy is living healthier longer. Not living longer, because if I live longer and unhealthy, I'm probably not necessarily that happy with my life. But if I live healthy long, then I have all the chances to have a fulfilled life. It's more in my hands. And so that's the ultimate measure that I'm personally interested in and measuring anything against. And if you look at all-cause mortality, for example, meaning we include everything, you know, from, you know, car accidents to everything, then you can't cheat yourself, because then you say, is it actually having an impact on all causes? And 10 grams additional fiber a day reduces all-cause mortality by 10%. There is no drug on earth that can do that.
This is, you need to repeat this because it's so important. So I will make you repeat that again, please.
So it's, if you measure every single bad thing that can happen to us, meaning death, and you say, what's the correlation with fiber? You find that a 10 gram additional fiber a day, and most of us should at least get that much more a day, 10 grams a day reduces all-cause mortality by 10%. To put it in perspective, that's many, many years of car death accidents in the U.S., the equivalent of that saved. The closest thing that sort of comes to it, but this is measured for people who are already sick and you're trying to save their lives, is statins that people get, to help them against cardiovascular disease. And those are the numbers, but these are sort of, that's a drug that you give to people that are already sick and you try to save them, prolong their lives. But there's nothing you can eat or do currently. No drug produced, nothing that beats fiber. And it's crazy that we're not paying attention to it. And I think the reason is you can't patent fibers. They're free. They're everywhere. So yeah.
So you can't make the same amount of money on fibers as you can on statins. I mean, how many people on earth are having statins? It's like one of the most common drugs, I think, out there. Yeah.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's UnitedHealthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, UnitedHealthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about UnitedHealthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
So you mean that people on statins, I mean, I know we can't give medical advices in this podcast because everyone is individual, of course, and should consult their doctor. However, you mean that if you're on statins and you're interested in this, there is a big chance that just by increase the intake of fibers on your everyday intake of fiber, you could actually might not need the statins anymore. Because they give horrible side effects as well.
No, I'm not saying that. Because I think once you're sick, you potentially need a certain intervention.
But what I mean is that fiber acts on both healthy and sick individuals in a positive way.
I can tell you that if you're healthy and you eat a lot of fiber, the point at which you might ever need statins will be way, way, way later in life.
Yeah.
So, but not for everyone, because some people may have a certain genetic predisposition to something. So it's that has to be decided individually, you know, based on sort of the medical situation that a person may have. But as a societal preventative medicine, so to speak, fiber beats anything else. Just on cardiovascular disease, 5 to 7 grams additional fiber a day reduces cardiovascular. So basically anything that has to do with heart disease, stroke, those types of things, reduces it by 10%. There's a correlation between higher fiber intake and reduction by 10%. So that's even on an individual disease, you see that correlation. And remember, correlation is not necessarily causation, meaning the two go hand in hand with each other. But when you sort of see that 5 grams has an effect and 10 grams correlates with twice the effect and 15 grams correlates with 3 times the effect, then you start believing more in causation. But of course, until you have the exact mechanism in your hand, you cannot necessarily say, yeah, I have proven that there is a causative. But the correlations are very, very strong. This is analyzed over multiple hundreds and thousands of people, meta-analyses. So across many studies, it's not just, you know, me in my basement having done a study and having convinced myself. It's not the case. It's broad, very broad.
Considering cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death in Sweden, an early death, I should say. Why don't we talk more about this? I mean, imagine if people really understood, I can empower myself. I can actually do things in order to lower my risk of an early death. Because I imagine if you ask people out there, they would agree with you. They would like to live healthy longer, you know? So why do you think we don't talk about that?
I think it has two sides, right? On the one hand, I think people do talk about it, but it gets drowned out by a whole bunch of other things. And, you know, as you know, I mean, you guys are trying, I feel very much in the same boat as you. We're trying to sort of figure out what's real and what's not real. Mm. And you know, just go out there and look at, you know, detox cures or something like that, right? So, you know, a lot of those cures have some fiber in them, and that's fine. But the mindset that you are toxic and that you need to somehow get toxins out of you, and that something that somebody gives you actually does that, besides fiber, which actually does some of that, is to me sort of dramatizing something that is actually not really, has nothing to do really with reality. So there's a lot of noise out there for things. And as I said, fiber is kind of boring. I mean, you know, any grain that you eat, any raspberry that you pick in the field someplace is packed with fiber. So how are you gonna make money on it? Mm. And most fiber, if you actually isolate it to sort of feed it to people, it's kind of tasteless. Mm. So I think the art is in making fiber tasty. And I know you're working on it. We're working on it. So
you have done really good in that field, though.
Thank you. But even there, we are struggling against, a lot of noises, other noises out there that have different degrees, maybe of benefit or pain or negative effects for people. But you have to kind of raise your voice above that. So I think that's the main root cause why it will take some time. Look at how much sort of protein has taken off. Mm. Why? Because you can link it to sexy bodies and building muscle and, you know, all of those things. If you actually look at the benefits of protein, you know, if you're a high-end sports person who actually damages their tissue, yes, protein is the thing that helps you repair it. But if you're not, you're eating already way too much protein in your day. So adding more protein won't, as a matter of fact, it loads up your body with stuff that you shouldn't be eating.
So actually, for those people, the sexy body comes through fiber. Is that what you say?
Well, that's the thing. You cannot I can prove that you live longer, but I can't. And that if that's sexy, great. But it's much easier to show you mine doesn't fit into that category. but if I did have a, you know, muscle-bound body, then it's easier to get people attracted to it because we're so visually based. And whereas, you know, somebody who showing a picture of a 104-year-old because they ate lots of fiber is not as sexy as should be, but because that's great, they've had maybe a lovely life. But it's a different sort of value, and it requires people to kind of step back and say, what kind of a life do I want to live? And wow, here is something that actually does not require me to change my lifestyle. It's not hyped. It's actually, you know, I'm just feeding. That's why I'm looking for these pictures, like that little animal that you're feeding. Yeah. So you get almost a responsibility towards this being that you're that is inside of you. So it's more that where you kind of step back and say, you know what, it's not a big deal to eat a few more fruit a day and a whole grain bread and, you know, those types of things. Because then I get to see my family for many more years, or I get to sort of feel good inside of myself for a bit longer. So it's that, but I think it's a harder sell ultimately.
Yeah, but I think also that talking about anti-aging, that is what the whole cosmetic branch is doing. And in a way, fiber is like a natural anti-aging miracle, I would say. Maybe not miracle, but it's natural anti-aging.
It is actually, indeed it is. Yeah. But it's very hard to then sort of say, I just ate fiber a week later. Guess what? All my wrinkles went away.
That won't happen. No. Then you need to do Botox. But that I wouldn't recommend, though. So it was just a joke. So the official recommendations is to get at least 25 to 35 grams of fiber per day. But the majority of us today are not getting enough of fibers on a daily basis. So how can an increase of fiber intake decrease the risk of infection and other health conditions? This we have talked about. So would you like to comment anything on that?
Yeah, as I said, sort of the fibers feed the bacteria, and then they start a whole cascade of things inside of our bodies. Mm. And almost everything we're starting to look at, from certain cancers to cardiovascular disease to our immune system. I just put out a white paper on lung diseases, meaning caused by viruses such as flu or corona. Mm. Fiber has a significant impact on that. Mm. Now, this is not done now in meta-analyses. There's, you know, something around 10 studies on it by now in mice, in humans, and in turkeys and rats. And the one in humans, which is sort of more of an observational study, I mean, of something like 400 students, those who had took in more fiber had a significantly reduced severity and length of a cold. Mm. That's, by the way, people eat vitamin C. Vitamin C has, again, a very, very small effect compared to that. It's actually interesting because you remember the short chain fatty acids I was talking about is something that some of the bacteria, almost all of them, produce. Mm. They have an effect on our immune system. And the reason that corona kills us, or some of us, is that it actually is an inflammatory response from your immune system. So your immune system overreacts, and then you get an inflammation in your lungs. The flu does that too, by the way, exactly the same mechanism. And then you, in a sense, your lungs then start reacting and they fill up with water and then you have a hard time breathing. Mm-hmm. These short chain fatty acids downregulate the bad effect of the overreaction of your body, which is actually the dangerous part in the virus. The virus itself is not in that sense dangerous. Mm-hmm. But then also upregulates the parts of your immune system that go attack the virus and increase your memory for remembering to attack the virus. So it's quite a smart way in which actually you get this effect from the secondary effect from your bacteria and the short chain fatty acids.
You actually think then that the explosion of lifestyle-related diseases wouldn't have gone through the roof if we had maintained our high intake of fibers? I mean, our ancestors had many times more of fibers each day, and now we hardly reach 25 grams a day.
Yeah.
So would you say this is the case?
If you see the correlation, and the correlation is concentration dependent, meaning the more you eat, the better. Answer is very simple. Yes, absolutely. And if you look at also globally, so one of the things we just have completed a study across all the data we could find in the literature. Mm. And we have looked at, because, you know, if I take, let's say, a very traditional person living in a sort of pre-industrial state somewhere, you know, in the world, and I compare it to diseases of somebody in the industrialized world, you don't see much cardiovascular disease in those people. And you look at their sort of food, it's full of fiber. Mm. Full of fiber and phytonutrients. And so in the less industrial world, you might die of, let's say, diseases that are infectious. Those types of diseases you might die of, but you generally don't die of cardiovascular disease. So the answer, I think, to that is yes. So that's one. But then we said, let's compare countries that are similar, because then you can find out if those who eat more fiber see an effect, because otherwise you have too many other effects that are playing into it. So we compared Japan to Italy to the US. They have similar healthcare systems. Their lifestyles are similar. The only main difference that we could find is the amount of sugar people eat and the amount of fiber people eat. We compared all the macronutrients as ratios. So basically, the relationship between sugar to fiber, sugar to fat, fat to complex carbs, fat to sugar, and so on and so forth. So all the main food groups. And the big correlation that we see in that order, the US, Italy, and Japan, is that the sugar to fiber ratio, which means the amount of sugar you eat for every bit of fiber that you eat, the more sugar you eat per amount of fiber that you eat, the more cardiovascular disease you have, the higher your healthcare costs, just name it, right? So, and those are three countries that are somewhat comparable with each other because they're all industrialized. They all kind of have a certain, mm-hmm. a certain kind of behavior. So,
wow, I would say this is true. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. So that basically says, and that implies something huge because if you look at the amount of effort that goes into reducing sugar and how darn difficult it is to not eat sugar, to reduce actually your sweet tooth. You and I both know we like chocolate.
Yeah.
I don't want to give up chocolate. I actually really don't want to give up chocolate.
Me neither. I've tried,
yeah. And it's a pleasure in life. Mm. And so I'm not advocating that people eat sugar. But what I'm saying is it's actually not the sugar we should focus on. It's the ratio between sugar. And the way I'm saying it is if you look at the data, it's a very simple thing. For this much fiber, you're allowed to eat this much sugar.
Okay, so now you're pointing at one finger and saying for one finger, sugar,
you can eat this many fingers of, one finger of fiber, you can get, you're allowed to eat this much sugar.
And now you're showing four fingers, so one for fiber and four for sugar.
That's about what's in a fruit. A fruit has this much sugar. A lot of people say, oh, fruit is not healthy because it has sugar. Yes, you're right. The sugar in the fruit is no different than the white table sugar that you put into your tea or coffee. There's no difference between them. They're both bad for you. But fruit comes with fiber. And that undoes that. Because if you look at fruit, it correlates with healthy numbers. So we know that this much sugar for this much fiber is totally fine. And so if you can basically increase the fiber, then you undo a lot of the damage that sugar does. And I think it's much easier to increase fiber in our diet than tax sugar and tell people not to eat sweet things and so on and so forth. I can tell you for myself, and I'm dealing with this every day, and the guilt is all over me for every bit of sugar that I'm eating. I ain't giving up chocolate. It just won't happen.
No.
But I'm eating a ton of fiber, and in a sense, I could care less.
That's a good way of putting it. You know, we usually say that focus on what you could add instead of what you could exclude.
Perfect.
Bonus with that is that as time goes by, you realize that you have actually naturally cut down on the bad things because there is not so much space anymore because you get very full from fibers compared to a poor fiber diet, so to say.
Yes. Fiber automatically reduces. If you also think about it, we're overeating fat.
There's different diets that become popular in different parts of the world, be it keto diet or, you know, high fat diet or low carb diet or low this diet or eat lots of grapefruit diet. So there are all these diets. Statistically, none of them work. The main reason is that first of all, it's very, very hard to keep it to a certain lifestyle because you have to change your lifestyle. And I think people can do things over a short period of time, but they generally revert to their normal lifestyle. But if you just step back though and look at it, we're overeating fat by 50 to 60%. So eating more fat is not a good idea, especially not saturated fat. Simple carbs and sugars we eat by a factor of 2 to 3. So we're just way overeating those. Protein, we're overeating by somewhere, you know, 60 to 100%. So adding more protein to your life, I know it's a big trend pretty much everywhere, protein bars and protein this and protein that. But you're already overeating protein. So adding more of it is not something that your body needs. Those are the main macronutrients that we're overeating, and we're undereating fiber. By about 50%. So the answer to me is a rather simple answer. Eat more of what you're under eating and eat less of what you're overeating. The nice thing about fiber is that it actually helps in that process because the more fiber you eat, the more satiated you are, and therefore you also eat proportionally less of the other macronutrients. Mm. And it's something that you don't have to change your lifestyle to do.
So am I going too far when claiming that a daily increase of fiber could even help to lower the great costs for our public healthcare that we see today?
I am convinced that that's the case on many fronts. So, you know, fiber, we didn't talk about it, but it has an positive effect on weight management. Mm. So obesity is right now going through the roof, most worryingly obesity in children. Mm. You know, it's places like the US, it's at epidemic levels, but in Europe is not far behind. Sweden isn't, relatively speaking, within Europe in good shape. But still, I mean, 20% obesity is still a very high number.
Yes.
And the cost, I know the cost in the UK, and this is the actual cost. This is not, let's say, if you have to employ somebody to widen the doors of hospitals so you can fit people through because they're so obese, I'm not even counting that as cost because it puts someone to work. It's good for your GDP. To speak, it's bad for your health. Now, true cost, we're talking something like 20 to 30 billion. Mm. So that's 1% of GDP. That is huge. Mm. And only increasing. That just on diabetes, on obesity, which are correlated with each other. And then you have all the cardiovascular diseases, you have all the cancers and so on and so forth. Yeah, absolutely. I think now the burden of proof have shifted. If anybody says that that's not the case, they have to prove it to me because the evidence is overwhelming.
Yeah. So if you say that one of the most important keys to optimize your health when it comes to eating habits is to increase the intake of fiber on a daily basis. We talk a lot about this in our blog, but there are so many people that are contacting us because they experience stomach problem when they try to increase their intake of fibers. What would you say to those people?
Well, there's fibers and there's fibers. So there is certain fibers that do, what are called oligofructose fibers. So these are fibers where the basic building block is fructose. As opposed to, let's say, glucose. Once the bacteria that break those down, they break it down, and one of the byproducts can be carbon dioxide, which is gas. So what you get is bloating, and you get gas formation. So if you go for fibers that are less of that nature, so you go ultimately for a blend of fibers, you are better off. So for example, in our products, we're very careful around what types of fibers end up because we don't want people to feel bloated. You get habituated to it very quickly. If you are not eating much fiber and then suddenly you go from that, let's say I'm eating 5 grams of fiber a day, which is basically I am effectively damaging myself because I'm not eating enough fiber, and I switch to 35 grams a day from one day to the next, there's going to be rumblings going on in my stomach, none of which is dangerous. But it will be uncomfortable for a few days. But, if you slowly up it to that or deal with it, then you get habituated to it.
Yeah, so you get adjusted to the...
Adjusted. Mm. Yeah. Same with coffee. You know, if you're not drinking caffeine and suddenly you have coffee, I mean, you're wired like crazy. But if you sort of up it after a while, you're not going to feel the same wiredness. Your body just adjusts. So, but I would say things that have oligofructose in them, you have to, initially be a bit more careful with, but then you get used to it.
Inflammatory bowel disease has historically been quite rare. But nowadays it has increased a lot. Would you say that this is a typical example of a disease that has increased due to low intake of fiber?
Most likely. There's a very interesting, again, these things are quite complex. So yeah. One has to be careful not to take my words as, it's a one-to-one thing. As remember, it's a very, very complex black box that we're dealing with in our intestines. And it's the upper intestines, the lower intestines, they function differently. It's the type of things that you put into your stomach on a daily basis that changes that whole ratio. So it's a complex thing. However, there is an interesting study a few years back where they looked at people who have had worms as when they were children. Things that children get often when they're kids. There is a correlation between lower incidence of inflammatory bowel syndrome and people who had worms when they were kids.
Oh, wow.
And the question is why? Nobody knows. So there are things that sort of have all kinds of effects on your intestines. But ultimately, the inflammatory bowel syndrome, it takes some time to sort of describe it in detail, but at the sort of little bit more high level, simplified level. So forgive it if it's not exactly the science as one should discuss it, but just to save time. What you're basically having is that the normal functioning of the walls of your intestines are compromised. And you get it in a number of diseases too, like Crohn's disease and others. And most likely, that health of the body of your intestines is highly dependent on a functioning ecosystem of your intestinal bacteria. And so people generally who eat high amounts of fiber have far, far lower levels of inflammatory bowel syndrome, especially if it has been throughout their lives. Yeah. So when you have already inflammatory bowel syndrome, then you need to sort of have support to sort of shift it. And often people also use probiotics, for example, fecal transplants, to actually put in new bacteria who then help heal things. But it's a more complex situation. So I think the simplistic answer to your question is yes. At the population level, for sure. At the individual level, one would have to sort of see, can you cure it with fiber, or do you have to be careful actually, because suddenly dumping a ton of fiber may give you, other effects that may make, once the disease is already there, may make it worse. So that's something that the individual has to then deal with their doctors. But if you're a healthy individual, eat the more fiber you eat, the less of any of these effects you see. I mean, one can't preach, and at the end of the day, it's exactly what you said. I mean, of course, if we ate zero sugar, or the amount of sugar that we should eat, which is far, far, which is a third of what we're eating normally. I mean, you need sugar. I mean, your body needs sugar. Sugar is good for you, but too much sugar is terrible for you. I think the wisdom of what you said is at the center of it, it's what you add rather than what you subtract, because it's very, very hard to change one's lifestyle. Whenever I'm in our laboratory and kitchen where my colleagues give me all kinds of things to taste, all of which has lots of fiber, basically my weight goes down steadily. And then I travel and I'm, under stress, and there's meetings and there's a cookie there, and I just kind of go...
That's the worst thing when you see, because then you stress, and if you have sugar in front of you, it's like it goes automatically.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like you can't resist it. And this is somebody who actually lives with it, preaches it, right? Yeah. And I'm admitting openly, I break down, right? So, and then my weight slowly goes up. So whenever I'm traveling, it goes there. Whenever I'm back home and doing experiments and tasting products, it goes straight back down. And so so it's really around, so I've now gotten used to, whenever I'm traveling, I just, wherever I can get my hands on any fruit or vegetable, I kind of just add it to it. And then it has, reduces the amount of other things that I'm eating.
So I do the same.
Yeah. Yeah. So you almost trick yourself, but it's easier to add. It's exactly what I'm going to take that as my mantra.
Yeah, you it's should.
What you subtract, which is great. A great way to.
So thank you so much, Khosrow, for spending time with me here and giving me so much knowledge about fiber. And I'm happy to be able to share this with all the listeners out there. And I hope you've had a wonderful hour. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lina.
You have listened to the Food Pharmacy Show with Lina Nachby and Mia Klase, joined by special guest Khosrow Isas Nikpay. The podcast is edited by me, Sebastian Ring, and I've also composed all the music. For more Food Pharmacy content, visit foodpharmacyco.com and follow us on Instagram, food_pharmacy.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.